Back in 1990, I interviewed poet Gary Snyder. Allen Ginsberg described Snyder as an American literary cultural hero and wilderness philosopher activist. Snyder became something of a counterculture hero in the 1950s when Jack Kerouac used him as the model for the main character in his novel Dharma Bums. Snyder left San Francisco's beat poetry scene in 1956. He spent 12 years studying Buddhism in Japan and visiting temples in India. When he returned to the States, he settled in Northern California, became active in environmental issues, and continued to write poetry and essays about the natural world. His book Turtle Island won a Pulitzer Prize. Snyder once wrote, "I grew up with the poetry of 20th century coolness, its hard edges and resilient elitism. When it came to writing out of my own experience, most of modernism didn't fit." I asked him why modernism didn't fit his experience.
It's a little hard to put an answer to that except to say modernism is resolutely urban and cosmopolitan and has its spiritual centers in Paris, London, and New York. Nature was considered second class and marginal by the mentality of modernism. Whereas for someone like myself, out at the far edge of the New World, in an area that had only been settled for 40 years and had been a vast forest wilderness for all previous millennia, the experiences are not the same. Looking at mountain landscapes, working with wildlife, and also with the physical labor of tools and logging exploitation, the human problems of both Indians and white people around Puget Sound, there's no place in that in the poetry of T.S. Eliot or Wallace Stevens.
And you found what you were looking for more in Chinese and Japanese poems?
It gave me a push in a new direction. It's not as though that was a whole new model to follow by any means, but a Chinese civilization, for example, Chinese culture, opened up an angle to me of the possibility of a high civilization with all of that refinement and sophistication that we expect from a civilization that had a much less exploitative attitude toward the natural world. Now, to be honest, as it turns out in practice, by the time the 20th century rolls around, China and Japan are just as bad as anybody else.
You reprint some of your poems in The Practice of the Wild, and I'm going to ask you to read one of those poems for us, any one of your choosing.
This comes out of the world of the experience of a young white guy logging together with elder Indian working men loggers, American Indian, Native American Indian loggers, with some of the cultural complexities of that. Ray Wells, a big Nisqually, and I each set a choker on the butt logs of two big larch in a thorn apple thicket and a swamp. Waiting for the cat to come back, he said, "Yesterday we gelded some ponies. My father-in-law cut the skin on the balls. He's a Wasco and don't speak English. He grabs a handful of tubes and somehow cuts the right ones. The ball jumps out, the horse screams, but he's all tied up. The caterpillar clanked back down. In the shadow of that racket, diesel and iron tread, I thought of Ray Wells' teepee out on the sage flats, the gelded ponies healing and grazing in the dead white heat."
Poet, essayist, naturalist, and environmentalist Gary Snyder is my guest. You moved to the Bay Area in, what, I think it was 1952?
52, yeah.
And it was in the Bay Area that you met Allen Ginsberg and Jack Kerouac. I'm wondering if you felt that you found kindred spirits when you met them.
Oh, indeed I did. There weren't many poets around that were working in the kind of idiom that I was trying for. And it was a great pleasure to run onto Allen and then to Jack Kerouac. Prior to that, my only other poetic comrades were Philip Whalen and Lew Welch.
Now, Ginsberg and Kerouac were both urban. And
but widely traveled and widely worked. Both of them had been to sea. Both of them had been to Mexico.
So that wasn't a gap for you. The difference between your
worked it out. I mean, I took them hiking, and they taught me some city smarts.
Like what?
Well, Jack taught me how to sit on the back side of Skid Row and drink Tokay out of a bottle in a brown paper sack.
A useful skill, huh?
Yeah. And how not to get noticed doing that.
Right. Well, that is very useful.
Yeah.
Now you were the main character in Kerouac's book Dharma Bums was based on you.
Yeah, so I'm told.
And well, I want to read you a short description here. He wore a little goatee, strangely oriental-looking, with his somewhat slanted green eyes, but he didn't look like a bohemian at all, and was far from being a bohemian, a hanger-oner around the arts. He was wiry, suntanned, vigorous, open, all howdies and glad talk, and even yelling hello to bums on the street, and when asked a question, answered right off the bat from the top or bottom of his mind, I don't know which, and always in a sprightly, sparkling way. Sound like you?
Maybe not quite that cheery. Otherwise, okay.
there's a part in Dharma Bums where the character who I assume to be the Kerouac character, where the character based on you, Jeffrey Ryder, is talking to the character I assume to be based on Kerouac, and is talking to him about drinking too much and warning him about how it's really going to hurt him in the long run. Did you have conversations like that with Kerouac?
Oh, indeed I did. And it's part of the paradox of Jack's life that he could hear that conversation in real life, report it quite accurately in a novel, and then go ahead and keep drinking.
Right, right.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, during the McCarthy era, when you were working for the National Forest Service for a while, you were blacklisted or something? You had to leave?
Because I was fired.
You were fired.
I was fired on orders from Washington, D.C.
What exactly had you done or thought politically that got you fired?
I think it was probably because I got my Siemens papers when I was 18 in New York City through the intercession of some officials in the Marine Cooks and Stewards Union, which was considered at that time a Communist Party-dominated union. And because friends of mine arranged that for me, they assumed that I was Communist Party or very close to Communist Party. I certainly had many friends who were in the far left there, but my own position had always been that of a cantankerous anarchist, in fact. Nonetheless, that stuck on my record for some years.
Do you think of yourself as a cantankerous anarchist now?
Oh, sure.
And what does that mean?
That means I'm very dubious about the virtue or the legitimacy of the national state as an institution, and I do believe that human beings are and can be self-governing in smaller social units, and that for the most part, what we call a national government is a giant protection racket, just like the mafia runs.
What kind of relationship do you have with the people who live near you politically and socially? I don't mean, going over for a cup of tea or something, but in terms of the environmental interests that you care most about and the things that you need to do to preserve the wildness around you?
We all work together. It is an error to think that people who live in rural areas have an easy time of it and can lay back and groove with nature and that there's no politics. The politics of public lands, of resource extraction, mining, in this case, water politics, and the pressures of rapid real estate development and growth are all around us. And we have meetings two or three nights a week.
Do anarchists like yourself like going to meetings three times a week?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I find no contradiction in that.
You don't?
I mean, anarchism simply means self-governing. And self-governing means you got to get out there and learn how to do it.
Your new book is a collection of essays that you've been working on for a long time. Are you still writing poems?
Oh, yeah. I've been writing a lot of poems over the last few years.
Any that are short and that you remember? Because I know you probably don't have any recent ones with you. But is there any short poem you'd like to leave us with?
I'd like to leave you with this, which is a little turn on forests and the idea of ecological climax. A virgin forest is ancient, many-breasted, stable at climax.
Gary Snyder, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Poet Gary Snyder recorded in 1990. His latest book, No Nature, New and Selected Poems, was published in 1992. This is Fresh Air.